Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable to you, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. In the beginning was the Word, John 1, verse 1. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth, Genesis 1, verse 1. Let's start at the very beginning, a very good place to start. The Do Re Mi song, verse 1, line 1. This morning's reading is what is referred to as the prologue of John's Gospel, the meaty beginning of the book of John. We hear this passage each Christmas season and perhaps assume that it is just about the birth of Jesus. It is much more. It is about the full meaning of everything Jesus was and is and did. St. John's Christmas story opens with, "In the beginning was the Word," which recalls the opening lines from Genesis. John wants us to see this gospel as the story of God in the world, not just the story of one character in one place and time. This text is about God acting in a new way with his creation. The story began in Genesis, with the creation of man in God's image, reaches its climax with the incarnate Word, the incarnate God, made flesh in Jesus. This incarnation is the new mode of God's presence among his people. Christmas is God continuing to give life to his people, and the Word became flesh and lived among us. Christmas, says St. Gregory of Nyssa, is the festival of recreation. It is God giving God's own life to his people. Episcopal commentator Michael Marsh describes the incarnation in this way. It is as if God said, "I want humanity to see my face. I want them to hear my voice. I want them to touch me. I want them to smell my sweat. I want them to eat my body. I want to live their life. I want them to live my life." And the Word became flesh and lived among us. This is God in the flesh, the divine human, holy humanity. This new mode is a celebration of humanity, God entrusting himself to humankind, a reaffirmation of humanity's goodness. It is the exchanging of life between God and you and the people in our world. In the early church, it was said that God became human so humanity might become God. Imagine what this means today, December 27th, 2015. It means that we are holy and intended to be that way, not as another achievement in our task-driven society, but as a gift of God. Grace upon grace. Not of blood or will of the flesh or will of man, but of God, as the Word became flesh and lived among us. In this passage, we hear that Jesus is the same as the Word that was in the very beginning, through whom all things were made, who is the light. The Word is bringing into being a new creation. God is saying again, "Let there be light," this time in the form of the incarnate Jesus. But then it gets messy indeed. God's chosen people in Israel don't recognize the light that he has sent. Jesus comes to God's people, and God's people, in typical human fashion, choose darkness over light. I'm going to resist a Star Wars reference here. So humans need another dose of grace, the grace that comes through Jesus, in order to recognize the light. We need to stop and think when we say, "I'm only human," excusing ourselves as if we were deficient in some way, rather than the tangible and visible messengers of God's light that we were meant to be? What if we began to see and believe that in the Word becoming flesh and living among us, we are God's first sacrament? In verse 12, it says, "To all who received him, he gave power to become children of God." That means us, here, now. You don't have to be anyone in particular. God wants anyone from anywhere to be born anew into the family which began with Jesus. To become children of the light, we are the image of God. And this is the truth of Christmas for us. And we are called to see that truth in the other, the stranger, and in ourselves. This means that Christmas becomes a way of being in the world and can have significant effect on the way we live our lives, on our actions, and our words. Jesus is the Word, or Logos in Greek, the incarnation of God's love. He walked the earth, grew to adulthood, laughed, cried, loved his parents and friends, was hungry and thirsty. He learned to read, he shared meals, he worked with his hands, slept, felt overwhelmed, was tested, was loved, felt disappointment, was misunderstood, was betrayed and made sacrifices, small and ultimate. He was fully human, and he experienced the feelings and situations that we are still experiencing and feeling 2,000 years later. Okay, you say, he was fully human, but what does that mean for me as a follower? How does that change my Tuesday? About 20 years ago, I had the privilege of teaching with a wonderful man who had lost a child before we became colleagues. I was not yet a parent and wasn't sure what to do or say when confronted with this knowledge. I felt deep sympathy and I wanted to offer comfort, but I didn't understand in any more than an abstract way the incomprehensible pain of losing a child. He told a story to me some years after I met him about going with one of the parents from his class to visit another parent whose child was dying. He shared that when they arrived, the child had died shortly before. When the dead child's mother saw them walk into the room, she headed, sobbing, not into the arms of her dearest friend, but into his arms. Her puzzled best friend was shocked and confused. The grieving mother later shared with both of them that she felt compelled to seek comfort from the man who knew what it was like to feel the loss of a child. She knew that he would understand in a way that only another parent who had been through this did. That visceral identification with the pain made him a source of comfort that she desired. My friend wept with compassion for someone grieving deeply, like Jesus did with Mary and Martha. Right now, in many locations around the world, there are 12-step meetings in progress. These anonymous fellowships, such as Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, are founded on the premise that people who have been there too, have recovered sobriety or serenity, are, after God, the best source of support, understanding, and compassion for persons struggling with addiction or the effects of another's addiction. In these groups, people share their experience, strength, and hope with those who struggle. These groups are a loving place for people who are broken, hurting, and fearful. Jesus, too, embraced God's people in brokenness and despair, offered them hope and even miracles. What's the point of these examples? We crave shared experience. The words of our shared experience bond us to each other in profound ways. Not just the heart-wrenching and desperate shared experiences, but the joyful, life-giving ones too. Been there, done that, takes on a new meaning when viewed in the light of the babe whose birth the world celebrated just 2 short days ago. Christmas for us is no longer an event, but a way of being God's recreated people. The Word made flesh is Jesus. The same Jesus, through his incarnate life, gets it, who has felt our feelings deeply and humanly and continues to feel them with us divinely. Jesus is in whatever joy or pain we are in, not abstractly, but in the flesh, in the darkest nights and in the shining moments. He knows. He gets it, and he gets us in the full range of our humanness. We are not alone. He is always there, and he knows exactly how we feel. When you pray, you can open your heart and mind to him, and he will understand. The Word incarnate lives in you. So God sent the Word made flesh to live the fullness of human experience, the fullness of our desire to be deeply connected through our experiences and in relationship with one another. The Word became flesh and has never ceased to live among us. It is found today in the shared experiences, joyful or painful, that bind us together. How will you go out and live Christmas as a verb this year? How will you connect with friends and strangers as a sacramental being? In what way will others see the recreation of the Word made flesh in you?